bottom one.
Such an appropriate introduction. This is Internet Top Team, our second podcast, and hopefully much more to come. Tonight we're going to be talking about the last UFC cards, 111, as well as Fight Night that just recently aired. Actually, tonight it did, and we might cover some of UFC 112 and Ultimate Fighter. But first, we can go to the St. Pierre Hardy main evented card of UFC 111, and to me, these fights way exceeded my expectations. I wasn't really feeling it that much going into it, but yeah, this was a really good card. And well, what were your thoughts overall on the show itself?
I gotta agree. I don't think I was really disappointed by any fight. Well, I mean the last fight. I mean, it was a little domination, but I mean, you saw wars with Jim Miller and Mark Bocek, and you know, you saw, I don't know, I enjoyed it a lot. I had some high expectations coming in with two title fights being on it, and it really exceeded my expectations.
Well, where would you like to start off?
I guess with the undercard that aired on Spike with the Nate Diaz fight. Nate Diaz and Rory Markham.
Well, there's a kind of interesting story with this, because at the weigh-ins, Rory Markham came in way over. He came in at 177 pounds, 7 pounds over the limit, well, 6 if you count the 1 pound runoff. But Nate Diaz still looked like the bigger and stronger fighter. It definitely imposed his will on the fight.
Yeah, I'll agree. Just like his brother, he seems to have adapted his game, and his boxing was looking really good. His length really was the story of that fight to me. He really kept Rory Markham at bay with that jab and ended up just teeing off on him. He looked great. What do you think?
Yeah, I agree. And I love the fight. I love 170 for Diaz, but there's talk that, well, coming from him himself, that he's going back to 55 after this. And I know that a fighter cutting weight and going down to a lower weight class is usually a good thing, and it probably is in Nate's case, but I think that extra mass helps him out a lot. He just seems a little too thin at 55 to me. It seems like he can get bullied around a little bit, even though he is longer. At 170, his body's a little more fleshed out, and he can actually, you know, control where the fight goes.
Yeah, it's true. At 155, he always comes in looking a little drained. He actually looked like he filled out his figure. He's a tall and lanky guy, and he actually looked like he had some meat on his bones in the fight on Saturday. And, I mean, if he can have that body mass, because most of the time, the way he gets fighters to the ground is either by pulling guard or, you know, with the little hip toss he does, the little judo hip toss. But with that weight, that extra weight, he might be able to actually, you know, get fighters to the ground in a more traditional way.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see where he goes from here, especially where he ends up. Now, there's another, well, two more fights that aired on the Spike broadcast, but the other one was scheduled was the Ricardo Big Dog Almeida versus Matt Brown. And
Cuchara!
And I actually didn't get a chance to catch this fight. I only read the results. So if you have any highlights you can tell me about, I'd be interested.
Ricardo Almeida, he's the real deal. I had questions.
He's the big dog.
Yeah, Cuchara. he really had, I don't know, I had some questions going into that fight about whether how he's going to handle that weight cut. And he looked great. The way he bullied Matt Brown around, I haven't seen anybody do that yet. And he really just, he pushed him up against the cage, he clinched with him, he landed punches while he's trying to get the takedown, and then ended up getting him to the ground. And I mean, usually when Almeida has you on the ground, the night's over. He's world class on the ground, and you know, I see big things from him at 170.
Yeah, and he's on a 3-fight win streak, and all three of those fights on a streak were in the UFC, and he's definitely I think he's gonna, the sky's the limit for him as far as where he goes with his jiu-jitsu, and he's gonna, yeah. Some of the other fights that were on the preliminary include, she's one of my favorite nicknames probably in the sport, Rodney Shownuff the Master Wallace. Shownuff the Master. You can't include the R in that, versus Jared Hammond, and Rodney Wallace comes in looking like just like an action figure, and definitely gassed pretty early. Hammerhouse style. Remind me of a modern day Kevin Randleman. it was a really entertaining fight to me, and I think this was the one that actually did win fight of the night. And it was just a guy who kinda had pillows for hands at Jared Hammond, and a guy who could throw two punches which would kill somebody but doesn't hit him, and then he gets gassed. And Rodney Wallace, it was reminded me of an earlier UFC fight when maybe the rules were just starting to get into place. It was just a definite extreme matchup of styles, and I had so much fun with this. I got really nostalgic for the early days. Keith Hackney would have been proud.
I actually I didn't catch this fight. I read up on some of it, though, but what I read was, you know, the first round was back and forth. It was a real good fight, and then, like you said, they gassed, and I don't know. I guess those fights can be really fun to watch when those guys are gassed and desperate.
Yeah. Well, Hammond never really got completely exhausted, but he couldn't finish the fight, and Rodney Wallace, who just looks so much bigger than him, was kind of, you know, whenever he got gassed, the strength advantage went out. So you had a guy who probably wasn't ready to push the fight and dictate the pace of where it went, and Jared Hammond. You had him trying to maneuver Wallace around, and it got pretty ugly. Maybe not necessarily the most technical fight, but very entertaining, very fun to watch. And, the other one that aired on Spike was the Husamar Paul Harris and Thomas Drywall.
It was a very unfortunate fight.
Yeah, there was some controversy because I know you were really expecting much better things from this fight.
Yeah,
I know you had talked about how this was, it had fight of the night potential, and Paul Harris caught him in a heel hook submission, and there was a little bit of controversy as to him not letting go after the tap out. And what did you think about the end of the fight? Did you think that was kind of dirty on Paul Harris?
Dirty? I don't know. I think adrenaline has something to do with it. People, like, I've been reading the board, like some forums, and they talk about, you know, he should have let go. He should have felt that he was tapping, and he even, I mean, you could watch Drivol went into to another place to start tapping, so he would get Paul Harris off of him. And if you look, the referee comes in, and you know, he's still a second late. It reminded me of when BJ Penn was, when he choked out Jens Pulver, if you remember that. He held on for a second or so long, but
yeah, definitely not as bad as the Babalu David Heath fight.
Yeah, I was actually about to bring that up because a lot of people have been comparing it to that, and I don't think it's anywhere near that severity. But
I mean, look what happened to, was it the Jamie Varner and Paulo Filho fight in the WEC where Varner tapped, but nobody noticed it, and Filho, he loosened up on it, and Varner was able to get out. You know, it's the job of the fighter to finish the fight, and it's the job of the ref to, you know, actually pull the fighters apart. So if you got a submission locked on and you don't feel the ref pulling you apart, Yeah, I would keep it on.
Yeah.
Because if you don't, you know, you take that chance of, you know, let go of the submission, having them escape, and, you know, potentially changing the outcome of the fight. So, no, and the whole thing of Joe Rogan counting in real time to a video shown in slow motion, I thought that was pretty funny. Saying, oh, he's holding on for 6 seconds after the tap out when everybody's moving in slow motion.
Yeah, and then he points out, he's like, oh, they slowed the clip down a little bit at the end. But I think the fight you're talking about was Chael Sonnen and Filio, and that was...
Yeah, I think that's what I was thinking
of. Yeah, it was real controversial the way that
people
happened.
Like to me.
But... But the thing, the only difference I see with the Babalu, well, I think it's kind of apples to oranges, but one thing is that it's a choke as compared to, like, a limb hold, where a limb hold, like, you see Draval, he's probably going to be out for a couple months because of maybe an extra second long hold or the referee not being able to get him, but, I mean, that's... I don't know. I can't really blame anybody in that situation.
That's the nature of leg locks, though. I mean...
Exactly.
Those tendons, you know, it can be milliseconds of difference between walking away from it and needing to be helped out.
And that's why some leg locks are illegal now, like the calf slicer, where, I mean, you could put up to, I think, 400 pounds of pressure on a, you know, your shin, it's going to snap immediately. But I don't think he really deserves that six-month suspension that he got for that extra long... Whatever, 2 seconds, if even that he held on.
Yeah. Well, I'm headed into the main card. The first fight was Jim Miller and Mark Bocek, and this was a pretty entertaining fight. Pretty scrappy. Like I think I said, Jim Miller would have been.
And, yeah.
He ended up taking it from unanimous decision. And what did you think of the fight overall?
I loved it. It was a real back and forth battle. Like you said, Jim Miller's a scrapper, just like, pretty much, I wouldn't even just say the Miller brothers, but any fighters from New Jersey, it seems like. If you see Pellegrino and Frankie Edgar, but I loved it. I thought, you know, to see that Jim Miller almost submitting a jiu-jitsu black belt, Mark Bocek, and a guy, and then Bocek using the BJ Penn maneuver on the back and locking up. Or tying up Jim Miller's arm with his leg. To me, that was the most surprising part, was he wasn't able to finish it. But that, I love seeing chess matches on the ground. And I don't know, that to me was fight of the night. But then again, like I said, I didn't watch the Rodney Wallace-Haman fight, so.
Oh, definitely not a technical fight. It seems like the UFC has this plan that the opening fight for their televised cards are going to have people like Jim Miller and Mark Bocek and like the fights tonight. Guys that are very technical, they have great training, but maybe not necessarily the best finishers. And it's kind of a good thing to, I guess, warm the crowd up for a televised card. Because you're gonna see good action, you're gonna see constant action, but you're gonna see 15 minutes worth of action, and I'm not sure if they do that on purpose or not. But if Jim Miller, if he develops some, you know, some nasty knockout power, he'll be very very good in this division. But
I think the same can be said about Bocek as well. His ground game looked spectacular. But
it's hard to teach power.
Yeah, that's something you really can't teach. But I think they pointed out, I think Bocek, they were talking about, he was the one, I think at like 18 or 19 years old, he was doing classes teaching the Fertitta brothers jiu-jitsu. So, I mean, he's got a good pedigree. But Jim Miller, big things from that guy in the future.
And the next fight was John Fitchburg versus Ben Saunders, and Saunders came into this card originally scheduled to fight Martin Kampmann. I mean, yeah. But then he got replaced by Jake Ellenberger, and then he got replaced by John Fitch. So, must have been a really weird training camp for Killer B. And this fight went... I know when this fight was first announced, we were text messaging each other saying, oh, man, Fitch is going to be a blanket. And He pretty much was.
That's for sure.
I mean, it's not necessarily lay and pray, but it's not exactly grounded pound.
Yeah, it's that the middle area.
Yeah. It's just, you know, nobody questions Fitch's wrestling. Nobody questions his ability to make the fight go to where he wants it to, but 7 straight decisions. I mean,
something's got to give, man.
Yeah. I know it's a sport, and, you know, wins and losses are the most important thing, but if you're not entertaining, the UFC will have very, very little patience with you.
Yeah, that's very true. I think one thing that might need to, I like to give Ben Saunders props for the way he handled himself on the ground, not being able to, because, I mean, Fitch, to give him credit, he was trying to advance his position, he was trying to, you know, move into side control and whatnot, and he was trying to work ground and pound, but Ben Saunders, he seemed to neutralize that. I think it was his length, though, that was giving John Fitch problems.
Do you recall offhand who ref this fight?
No, I don't.
It should have been Dan Mergliotta. Because he would have stood him up after about 3 seconds of that, and maybe Ben might have had a chance after that.
Yeah, we'll get to that later. I'm pretty sure, if memory serves me correct, I think it was Kevin Mulhall.
Okay. Well, the next fight was Kurt Pellegrino and Fabricio Camoes, and this fight had a pretty interesting finish to it. It was kind of the reverse of the Nate Marquardt spike, because Pellegrino was actually, I don't know if that was really his intent. I think he was just trying to shrug him off his back, but Camoa's face just nailed the ground, and I think Pellegrino even said that that's really what finished the fight. That kind of just made him loopy, and he easily got the submission after that. And I guess a bit of a talking point is that, according to the rule book, that spike to the head is, you know, technically illegal. But in Pellegrino's defense, you're not, I don't think that was really his intent, but more just trying to get him off.
Yeah.
It really worked out well for him.
Actually today, I think it was today or yesterday, the New Jersey Athletic Commission came out and said that it's actually a legal maneuver because he's defending himself.
Okay.
Yeah, they said because that Camoes was the attacker, that Pellegrino's allowed to do that to ward off submission attempts. It's a lot like when John Fitch and Diego Sanchez fought. There were a couple times where Diego had him in a triangle or a reverse triangle. I don't remember, but John Fitch stood him up and planted him on his head a couple times. And I guess, yeah. Then that was definitely the turning point in the fight, which was a very back and forth fight for the, I guess it was 2 rounds, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it was very entertaining.
It's, I mean, that rule is, it's very ticky tack, and, you know, it's kind of like some of the rules in other sports where what's the line between defense and offense? And I don't know, I think the whole spike rule should maybe be relooked, because who doesn't love a pile driver?
Exactly.
I mean, maybe that's a bit of my love for Manoa, man, but if you can throw pro wrestling moves out in a real fight, you'll probably find a fan in me.
Exactly. That's as a former pro wrestling fan and a bit of a nostalgic pro wrestling fan. Yeah, that's definitely awesome. It was smart to me too. Pellegrino looked great in that fight.
And, the next fight in the card was the interim heavyweight championship match between Frank Mir and Shane Carwin. And wow, Shane Carwin's hands are just like granite, and he just comes in like Little Mac from Punch Out. And just swings and swings and swings, gets that star, and wham!
He worked up his special against the cage whenever he was clinching.
This is Mir reminds me of just somebody who, he's got all the tools in the world, but he just, I don't think he, maybe, I don't know if it's his game plan, or I don't know if it's his training or his work ethic, but when it comes to crunch time, when it comes to, I hate to use a baseball reference, but when it comes to being clutch, Frank Mir just does not have it, and he seems to fold when the pressure's on, and no more pressure than even though it's interim, it's a championship bout, and, you know, Conwin, the more inexperienced fighter, just controlled the fight, went everywhere he wanted it to be. Frank Mir was on his heels on defense for the whole fight, and it was really just a matter of time for Conwin, and those uppercuts were nasty.
Oh, agree. I think credit really has to be given to Greg Jackson in that camp for that game plan, but also you got to look at Shane Carwin and his ability to stick to that game plan. I think Frank Mir got caught looking toward the rubber match. What do you think?
I believe so. I mean, even in the pre-fight interviews and even in his talking, his camera time beforehand, it was Brock. It wasn't Carwin that he was really concentrating on. And, you know, Frank himself said that Shane Carwin's a better version of Brock Lesnar. And, well, we saw what happened the last time Frank fought Brock Lesnar.
Yeah, no kidding.
But, I mean, and this is obviously going to set up the Shane Carwin-Brock Lesnar fight. And it's just going to be, you know, two nasty, powerful wrestlers going at it. And I'm really interested to see who can break whose will first and get the job done. It's going to be a... You know, it could very well be like two guys who are great on the ground, great submission artists, turn it into a bad kickboxing fight. It could be two guys who are great wrestling might turn it into, you know, a sluggish kind of Randy Couture up against the fence style. But as we saw with Carwin, he knows what to do when he presses that opponent up against the cage. So I'm really interested to see how that fight's going to go down.
Yeah,
more importantly, when it's going to go down. I want to have it, like, right now.
Yeah, me too. I don't think Shane Carwin took too much damage, except maybe breaking his fists. I think what I look for in that fight is Brock Lesnar going to let Shane Carwin push him up against the fence and control him like Mir did. I don't think he's going to be able to, but I don't know. Who knows? I didn't think Carwin had I didn't really think he had that great of a chance against Mir, and I got proven wrong on Saturday. I just want to go on record and say that Shane Carwin's the real deal, and I believe.
Now that he has your seal of approval, I think he's ready for that championship shot.
I think so, too.
I think that was the one thing holding him back.
Yeah.
What does Internet Top Team think about Shane Carwin? That's what Joe Silva was waiting for. But, I don't know if this will even be a factor or not, but how do you think Brock's going to come back from that stomach illness he had? What was it, like, diverticulosis or something like that? Some weird medical term.
Do you think that's going to
play any kind of factor as far as how he's going to look in his next fight?
I don't know. It's hard to say without seeing him in actual training. I haven't seen any videos of him yet, but from what I've seen and what I've read, he looked, I don't know, after his surgery and after his recovery, he looked a little smaller. He looked probably like he's, and from reports, he's walking around like 250 or something like that, but he looked huge in the ring. He was towering over Shane Carwin. I don't think it'll play that big of a factor. I think ring rust will have more of a factor than his physical shape, because the guy's a monster. He's a machine. He's arguably one of the best athletes in sports right now. Just from a sheer physical standpoint, but no, I don't think it'll play that big of a factor. Do you?
I just think that Brock Lesnar's his physical attributes are, you know, I wouldn't worry about it, because even if he might have lost a little bit, he's still just a freak of nature. I mean, the guy almost made an NFL team not playing any downs in college, and he's done. You know, he did the whole amateur wrestling thing, national championships. And yeah, I don't think it's going to be an issue, but, you know, we'll see. If he comes out looking like, you know, showing up the master. If he comes out looking like Jared Hammond, we'll find out.
Yeah, I don't think either guy will ever come out throwing, either of those guys are going to be throwing pillow fists.
He'll make a Sandman Irvin-esque impression at the weigh-ins.
Oh, God.
Go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to say, the one thing I can't ever take away from Brock Lesnar, he never looks like he's really tired in a fight, so I don't think his training or his cardio is going to be that big of an issue.
He went 15 minutes with Heath Herring, and, you know, Herring never really did anything to press him on that fight, and it was really just, you know, Brock controlling the fight and kind of his, I guess, Brock's inexperience not really being able to finish. But he went 15 minutes and didn't really slow up for anything in that fight. So, and like Sharp and Shane Carwin, you know, this was supposed to be his test fight. This was supposed to be, you know, you may potentially go 5 rounds, even though really nobody thought it was going to go 5 rounds. But it could have went 5 rounds, and we were supposed to see what Shane Carwin's gas tank looked like. And that question mark is still there. So, if a Carwin-Lesnar fight does happen, it would have the potential to maybe go deep into some rounds. I don't think, I don't think that fight going into the championship rounds is an afterthought. I think it's a very strong potential to happen because you got two wrestlers trying to control each other, and if a wrestler, that's a wrestler's first priority to dictate the pace of the fight and, you know, try to impose their will. And if they are not doing that, they're not really looking to finish the fight. So if it's a struggle, and I think it could be, you know, this fight has potential to go some distance. And, you know, can Shane Carwin do 25? Can Brock do 25? We'll see.
Yeah, I agree.
The main event for the UFC 111 card was George St. Pierre defending his championship against Dan Hardy. And I was pulling for Dan a little bit just because of the underdog factor. And, you know, I'm not surprised the fight went how it went, just GSP domination in all aspects of it. But, you know, at least Dan Hardy comes out not looking that bad. I mean, sure, he really didn't have much offense at all, but, you know, especially comparing how Dan looked at the end of the fight to maybe, say, how John Fitch looked at the end of the fight, it was a decent showing from someone who is, you know, pound for pound in the elite tier of mixed martial artists. But the two things that stick out in my mind on this fight were the two GSP submission attempts and Dan Hardy being able to, you know, somehow defend them. And, oh, that armbar was pretty nasty. And I don't know if it was just Dan's will to fight it off or if he's just that flexible, but what did you think about those submissions? Do you think that, you know, most other fighters would have tapped to him?
The armbar, I think the one thing that saved him in that armbar is his patience. He showed a lot of patience in his defense. I think a lot of fighters would have tapped to that just because they don't want to get their arm broken. It reminded me of Rich Franklin when he fought Travis Luter. Travis Luter had a really deep armbar on him, and then he rolled just like Dan Hardy did and escaped from it. I'm impressed with Hardy. His defense was great, yeah. But I agree, I think a lot of fighters would have tapped to that.
That Kimura was pretty... I thought it was pretty, pretty successful, pretty devastating, and he had it cranked, too, and... It kind of hurt me to watch it a little bit.
Yeah, I was cringing.
Yeah.
It was...
Where does GSP go from here? I mean, does he have another legitimate contender in his division, or should he...
I think we touched on it last time. After he fights Dan Henderson, it looks like, all implications look like Dana White's going to sign Jake Shields. Mm-hmm. And I think that's a big possibility for a fight. But I also think I also think a fight with Ricardo Almeida would be interesting. But yeah, from right now, I would say that GSP, I mean, in all honesty, he'd probably end up being a coach on Ultimate Fighter, which I don't want to see, but I think that's what's going to happen.
Yeah, get your subtitles ready.
Yeah, no kidding. But I don't see him moving up to middleweight at all right now. Maybe the winner of Paul Daly and Koscheck. If Paul Daly wins that fight, I can see him getting a title shot.
Yeah, maybe a potential UK card.
Yeah, potentially. That could be huge, because you want to talk about somebody who throws bombs. Paul Daly. Oh. Devastating, but will he be able to stay on his feet? Because Dan Hardy throws bombs, trains with Paul Daly. He can stay on his feet. But I want to go back to what you said about the way Dan Hardy looked after the fight. He really, I mean, I saw pictures of him today when he was in Charlotte for the Ultimate Fight Night card. He looked fresh. He didn't look like he took too much damage, and he's not, I don't think he's suspended for any time, so.
Yeah, he didn't take much damage, but he was giving up positions left and right, and definitely had, you know, fight-ending potential finishes, and it just didn't finish the fight. But no credit to no disservice to GSP, Dan Hardy just fighting it off. But yeah, I think GSP himself said that he was really trying to finish the fight, but GSP few strings of decisions, and I don't know if you can really question his fight finishing abilities, but I think that GSP isn't really, I don't want to say he's not worried about putting on a show, but he's very diligent in this fight. He's very methodical. He has a game plan, and that might be probably due to Greg Jackson, but he really wants to control the fight, and he doesn't really, like a John Jones, for example, he'll throw something out just because he wants to, or because he thinks it might, you know, some flashy things. GSP has that Superman punch, but really he's a very predictable fighter when it comes to it, but the thing is, he's predictable, but you still can't stop it. Kind of like, I don't know why baseball's on my head. I guess opening day's coming up soon, but Mariano Rivera. You know what pitch he's going to throw. You know where he's going to throw it, and you'll still miss it. So, if GSP does fight Jake Shields, or even Paul Daly, I think GSP's going to do what GSP does. Take him down, grind out, you know, not necessarily grind out, but he's going to work on the ground and maybe not do a lot of damage, but look dominant.
Yeah, I agree. I think right now GSP is probably the smartest fighter among the pound-for-pound best, and I think he's probably the best pound-for-pound fighter in the world right now. Because he's showing that he can't be stopped. You can't stop his takedowns. I don't think anybody at 170 could stand up and sprawl. He comes in with a set, you know, set game plan, like you said, and everybody knew Dan Hardy was going to have to ward off a takedown. Even Dana White was talking about, I think he tweeted or something saying that, you know, he wished Hardy would have worked on his takedown defense, but how you can't stop that. John Fitch couldn't stop it. Thiago Alves couldn't stop it. I mean, with GSP, even with the torn groin. And, I mean, I see people talking about how GSP's a boring fighter. It's not pro wrestling. I mean, there's an entertainment aspect to it, but, I mean, when it comes down to it, the guy's an athlete. He's the best at what he does, and he wrestles. And you can't stop him. And it's not like he's laying on you most of the time. Like you said, he's going for, you know, he was switching position. He was in side control a lot during that fight with Dan Hardy. And submission attempts. You don't see John Fitch going for submission attempts, really. You don't see,
Yeah, GSP's wrestling is definitely not like Jake O'Brien's wrestling.
Oh, God, no. I don't think any truer words have been said so far, but I mean, it's only our second episode, but I think that can stand true for a while. Until you can ward off that takedown, GSP is going to continue to be the best fighter in the world. I thought he might have been a little gun-shy after the Sarah fight. I thought that was why maybe he's been taking these fighters down, but maybe I haven't been the biggest George St. Pierre supporter, as you probably know, but maybe I just had to put that aside and realize that he actually is. I mean, he's trying to transition into different spots and trying to finish the fight, but he's just making them look like kids when it comes to wrestling, and he's going to continue to do that. I don't see anybody stopping him.
But if nobody can stop him, why bother to change it up?
Exactly. If it's not broken, don't fix it. I don't I don't think anything gets lost in French-Canadian translation either.
No, his rhythm is definitely unmatched.
Oh, he did, I did see a little headline where he said he wasn't impressed by his own performance, so...
Well, we can switch to the tonight's Fight Night card, and it's actually one of the first UFCs I watched in a while live, due to work schedule or whatever. But I forgot I don't have the power of DVR to live broadcast, and I forgot how many commercials there were.
Yeah.
I know it was talked about on the UFC on Versus card, but not only the commercials, but the in-segment tie-ins that they do. It's just, I know it's free TV and they've got to pay the fighter salary somehow, but man, sometimes it gets too much. You can have like 30 minutes go by without a fight.
Yeah, I think the only fight I saw tonight was the main event where they didn't go to a commercial between rounds, and I don't know. Like you said, they got to pay the bills though. It's on Spike, which is a niche network, so.
Oh, but they're getting jailed now.
What's that?
You didn't see the previews for Jail whenever during the broadcast? It's like, I guess it's kind of like Speeders or one of these, true TV shows, except they just film people getting booked into jail. I just saw somebody with a spit bag on their head and thought a war machine.
Oh.
Too soon?
No. Not at all. The guy did porn. Come on, it's never too soon.
Have you watched a War Machine promo?
No, I haven't.
Oh, you're missing out. His top game is just. And the way he finishes from the bottom, unbelievable.
Throws in a rear naked choke every now and then.
Alright, the first fight on the card. Oh man, you got me on slow thinking about War Machine. But the first fight was Ross Pearson versus Dennis Seaver. And this was, like I said, then the first fight of 111, a very entertaining fight with two guys who just want to throw down and, go toe-to-toe. I know Pearson has power, and Seaver just may have a very good defense to that, but it was a fight that I never really felt either fighter was in too much danger at any point in it, but it was definitely a good showing for the real deal Ross Pearson.
Yeah, I'll agree. I think Seaver did have he had some good counters, and he's a pretty creative fighter on the feet, and he had, Pearson a little tentative at times, but I think Ross Pearson definitely does. I mean, he's shown continual improvement since winning the Ultimate Fighter, and he keeps getting better and better. His stand-up looked great tonight. But like you said, I like the starter fights though. I think I never really thought about it like that, but it does look like that they start you off with the pretty much fight of the night and 3-round war. But it was a really entertaining fight, and hats off to Dennis Seaver for, not getting finished in that fight.
Yeah, it was a very good showing for both guys. I mean, I definitely saw it going 30-27 like all the other judges. But, Dennis Seaver was never really in a bad position to where I thought he was going to get finished. He got outworked by Pearson.
Yeah, Ross Pearson, he got his timing down. And he was just countering him left and right. And, they kept talking about that spinning back kick. And, you know, he caught it. I mean, he landed it once at the end, but you know, that had to have Pearson a little tentative. But he was picking him apart for the most part, though. I can't wait to see who they give him next.
The next guy we had was Nate the Rock Corey and Jorge Rivera.
You mean Phony Carter, right?
what was his quotable quote on his season on the comeback?
The one I remember was whenever they were doing ole ole ole. He's like, you know, that was somebody making fun of him.
Yeah.
He said, "Don't you mean Jorge, 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 Jorge?"
Well, such a geeky guy, man.
Yeah.
He's definitely strong fighter. Definitely got some power in those hands. And I just want to say a few things about Nate Corey's his chin and his heart. He, you know, some fighters would have went down after that first barrage. Some fighters would have went down after that second barrage. But Nate, for better or worse, took it and just kept took it. Not only took it, but looked for counters, looked for a way to get out. Eventually, it was too much for him. But you know, Corey fought till the last stepper. He didn't leave anything in the cage, or he left it all in the cage. That's the catchphrase I was going for. He left it all in the cage.
Yeah, I have to agree with that. Most of it blood, though, and.
Yeah.
Jorge Rivera looked awesome in this fight. This is the best I've seen him, probably ever. He was always shaky in his earlier fights, but I mean, he came in there with a game plan. And Nate Quarry, he does like to stand and bang. And when I saw that fight, I just kept thinking he's gonna hit back with one big one and drop Jorge. But I mean, hats off to Jorge Rivera. He dominated that fight.
Do you think that that stand and bang aspect of Nate Corey may have cost him in this fight? Because I mean, Corey is definitely a mixed martial artist. He's comfortable on the ground, and whereas Jorge Rivera, he's pretty much just a stand up guy. So I'm wondering if maybe his game plan really wasn't the best one to go with, because if you know, in a mixed martial arts fight, you want to try to, you know, to try to expose the other guy's weakness and work on your strengths. And maybe Nate might be better on his feet than on the ground, but he's got to be a lot better than Jorge on the ground. And you know, I can't even remember if he even actually attempted one. I think it was just a stand-up fight, but I don't think he attempted any kind of takedowns or clinches or anything like that. So kind of wondering about that, because I thought Corey would try to work it to the ground, and he never did.
Yeah, he's got a good wrestling pedigree. There are a couple times, I think, but I think it was out of desperation more so than anything that he tried to take down Jorge Rivera. He was rocked. I think he was just trying to grab the legs to recover a little bit, but I agree. I don't think he was really going to employ any kind of ground game into that fight, and I think that was a mistake. Like I said, he has a good wrestling pedigree, and I think, I don't know, he has rocks for fists, I mean, like his nickname, but he gets away from that. He gets away from his wrestling. I think he can have devastating ground and pound, but he just chose the wrong guy to stand and bang with tonight, I think.
This was a kind of weird matchup, because it's two guys who, well, maybe not so much Corey, but definitely Jorge Rivera, and I even say Corey too. His I think they're on the tail end of their UFC or top level fighting careers. And Corey maybe with his injuries, Jorge with his age. It's kind of weird that these two guys were put up against each other, because there's really no not too much ground is being gained or lost with a win or defeat with this fight. I mean, you know, there's no really jumping up the ladder to a potential middleweight title shot. Both guys still have a lot, you know, they've got some competition ahead of them, and, you know, win or loss, it seemed like a weird matchup to me.
Yeah, I think it was just a lateral move. It was a lateral matchup. It's I don't know. I could see them maybe fighting mid to top level guys. Upper mid level guys. Because I think they're both pretty solid middleweights. I mean, Nate Quarry at one point was looking like he's gonna contend for a title if it hadn't been for injuries. But I don't really see them moving up too far and moving down too far really, because it's UFC. There's not too much, too much riffraff in the middleweight division.
Like if Rivera was matched up against like an Okami or Marquardt or Sonnen, that second tier to if the title holder and the number one contender, the top tier, those guys are the second tier. And if Jorge Rivera fights anybody in that tier, he's a definite underdog, if not pretty much penciled in to lose.
Yeah. I'll definitely have to. I'll agree with you on that. It's a real top heavy division.
But I guess that's why I watch the sport. So we'll see if Jorge can start a run.
That'd be awesome to see. To see a guy 38 years old and that's struggled early on in his career, but to come back and make a run at it. I'd like to see that as a fan.
And the Undertaker came into the building next and turned on all the lights.
He hit it with some lightning.
Yeah. Well, after they got all that fixed, did you want to talk about the Kaoluno Gleison Tibau fight?
It kind of saddened me seeing Kaoluno get thrashed.
It seems like the the pioneers of the lightweight division are kind of falling by the wayside with Pulver and Uno and not to spoil the main event, but Gomi.
Yeah.
It seems like the torch might have been passed, especially with the probably started with the Pulver Penn fight, but definitely proven now that the newer crop of lightweights are they're too much for the old guard to handle.
Yeah.
Uno he didn't look like the guy from UFC 40s and 30s, the guy that would come in with a flying kick.
Yeah.
Like Liu Kang.
Yeah, he definitely looks like a shell of his former self, and it's sad to see because he's a great fighter to watch, and just like Jens Pulver, but see those guys continuously lose. I think they'd benefit from stepping down and maybe become trainers.
Yeah, try to work into to coaching. I would agree with you with that. But after they aired that, they got the lights back on, and Roy Nelson fought Stefan Struve in the battle of tall versus fat. Fat kicked some tall booty.
Yeah.
It was like a Tubby Fedor-esque overhand right.
Yeah.
It kind of looked like the Fedor knockout of Arlovski, except Struve was on his feet, not jumping.
Yeah. Yeah, it was a little surprising to me. I guess it wasn't too shocking, because Struve doesn't have the best defense on the feet, yeah, but
Nelson did just come off of that nasty knockout of Schaub. Maybe he found some hands in the past with his Arlovski fight, which I know you used to feel pretty strongly about that stand-up.
Yeah.
That Arlovski fight that Roy Nelson had.
And I continue to. Don't bring it up. I'm a little sore about that, but
we have enough time in the broadcast for that.
Yeah, that's true. But one thing I noticed was that, and I guess I'm just now seeing it, but I guess I can look back and see it now, is that being so tall, being 6'11", like tonight he had a 11-inch height advantage, he has to throw his punch downward. He has to throw down. So say if he was fighting somebody that was his height, he would be throwing more so laterally. He's leaving his head open. And, I think back to it, Paul Buentello did the same thing. He just, you go in with that overhand right whenever he's jabbing, and his head's wide open because he has to punch downward at you.
And this might be a little extreme example, but take Hogman Choi. Even in kickboxing, if a smaller guy just kind of gets up close to him, makes it a really close clinch battle, or just removes that length aspect from the stand-up fight. They really seem to suffer, the taller fighters, when you get it real close. And Nelson was able to break distance. And then after that, just threw that nasty shot that put Struve, bent his leg real funny. I thought he might have got hurt from that. Almost crow cop. But just ground and pounded to finish it off. And Roy Nelson, Ultimate Fighter winner, possible heavyweight contender.
I agree.
Would that belt fit around that waist?
I think they'll have to put a few notches more on that thing.
It'll be Dana White trying to get around there. He might have to have a second hope or something.
Yeah.
It was definitely good to see the victory belly rub tonight.
Yeah, he's definitely turning heads. I'm a big fan of the guy. I'm a big fan of Stefan Struve as well. I think he's gonna be just like, I mean, Roy Nelson in his post fight said, you know, when that guy turns 25, he's gonna be a force in this division when he gets older. But Roy Nelson, he's proving to be a contender. Like you said, they don't give him James. I hope they don't give him James Toney like he said. But
I don't know. You know I love me a freak show fight. Roy Nelson versus James Toney. That wouldn't really do anything for the career of Roy Nelson, but it would entertain me. So
yeah.
I want
to
watch it.
I think that would definitely sell some tickets, too. Not as much as I think a Zulu Zinho versus Roy Nelson, but...
Oh, man. Maybe even a... Oh, dare I say Rulon Gardner?
Ooh, Rulon Gardner. I haven't seen him fight in years.
I think he only had that one fight with Yoshida, and that was it for Rulon Gardner, the MMA fighter. He's probably coaching somewhere in Iowa now or something.
Yeah, probably so. But back to Roy Nelson, I think he's in the mix as far as, I don't think he's with, you know, the triangle at the top between, well, I guess it's not really a triangle, but I guess four fighters, Dos Santos, Carlin, Kane, and Lesnar, but...
I think I read a rumor that if Nelson won this fight, he would be put up against Dos Santos.
Oh, okay. Well, that's an interesting fight.
Yeah, and, I mean, I'm not sure if that's necessarily, I don't know, because, you know, they kind of, not definitely came out and said it, but they kind of hinted at the idea that the UFC didn't want Junior Dos Santos and Cain Velasquez to fight because that could be a potential big money matchup down the road when both of them are at their peak of their UFC careers. I kind of think the same kind of goes with Roy Nelson. I think that he is, I mean, he's definitely an experienced fighter and he's been in the game for a while, but he's not necessarily, even with the Ultimate Fighter, he's not necessarily a marquee fighter yet. And to have him go up against the Dos Santos, well, stylistically and, you know, maybe as far as competitive-wise, it would be a very good matchup. I don't think that it might get the attention that it would deserve if they maybe waited down the road, let both of them get a few more wins in the UFC, and then make it, you know, a UFC 121 Nelson versus Dos Santos instead of, like, undeniably... subtitles
yeah.
When they can't sell the fights on the names alone.
Yeah. I think somebody for Roy Nelson, I think it'd be like in the Congo range in the next fight.
Just embrace it. Embrace Roy Nelson and James Toney.
Oh God. I would really love to see that because I think Roy Nelson with those little gloves, I think he'd be able to box with him. But I think he would end up, because James Toney is not exactly a, you know, in his prime.
The shoulder roll versus the jelly roll? Come on.
But I think Roy Nelson would take him down and, you know, implore the belly. Put it on his face and just hope that, you know, hope he doesn't get stood up by Jorge Alonso.
Yeah,
working
I don't think that fight... I don't see a Roy Nelson James Toney fight being any different than the Roy Nelson Kimbo fight.
Yeah, I agree with you completely on that. But I think I'd like to see Roy Nelson fight Chuck Congo.
Yeah, That could be a potential matchup down the road that I could see them doing.
Or Heath Herring, if he's still with the UFC. I have no idea. I haven't seen activity with that guy in a long time, so.
I think he's getting into acting now.
That's not a bad thing.
Yeah, but the main event for the fight nights was Kenny Florian and Takanori Gomi, and jeez, you know, Kenny Florian for the first two rounds was reminding me of like a Lennox Lewis or a Klitschko brother. He's just working the jab, working his length, and not really doing a whole lot, but dominating. Like, because Gomi had nothing for that jab, and he's keeping him in his reach. Florian's reach is, I don't know how many inches, but it's definitely a bigger reach than Gomi's. And he's just working him for two rounds. Maybe not necessarily the most exciting of methods, but definitely dominating. And third round, Gomi tagged him. Probably the first good shot he got on Florian, and you know Florian just instantly took him down right after that.
Yeah.
Gomi got tooled on the ground and rolled right into a rear naked choke and finished the fight. And you know it's a good win for Kenny Florian. I mean, Gomi is one of the greatest, definitely greatest Japanese lightweights of all time, if not lightweights of all time. But you know, I don't necessarily know how much a Takanori win over Gomi 2010. I mean, Florian's obviously in the top tier of 155ers, and this just cements his place. I wish Gomi would have showed something a little more, because having another top guy in the 155 mix would definitely been a nice thing, but. As far as I saw tonight, Gomi's, he's not top level in the UFC, and, I'm not really sure how far he falls, but, because, I mean, Florian was a top contender before the fight, and he's a top contender now, so I guess maybe that was just, a fight to keep him in fighting shape, to, keep him relevant, and I understand that, but I really wish Gomi would have had a better showing. Because having new blood into the mix is always a good thing. The Takanori Gomi that I saw tonight, there's not a lot of matchups in his weight division that I see him as a favorite for. Maybe he can go the Jens Pulver route, drop some pounds, and try his way in the WEC. But then again, we saw well after Cub Swanson that worked for Pulver.
Yeah, that's true. That's one of the things I really noticed or really thought about when they announced the Gomi-Florian fight was that, I mean, for Florian, it really doesn't do too much except, he just beat a legend in the sport. And for Gomi, I mean, that baptism by fire, giving him, this, to me, Kenny Florian's the second best lightweight in the world. He's, like, arguably the most complete, or second most complete fighter in lightweight division. But, I mean, going into that, I mean, if he loses to Kenny Florian, it's like, it's Kenny Florian. The guy's lost one fight in the past, like, 2 years, I think, 3 years, and it was to BJ Penn. And
yeah, before that, it was the Diego fight, wasn't it?
I think, he had that fight with Sean Sherk for the lightweight belt.
Oh, yeah.
But I don't know if you can really put an asterisk on that or not. I won't get into that, but, yeah. But I don't know, I saw some things, Gomi looked, he looked like he was in good shape, that's one good thing, he didn't gas, really, and, like you said, he tagged Florian toward the end of the fight. I thought Florian was rocked for a second there, but,
Maybe you could put Gomi up against, like, maybe a Joe Stevenson.
Yeah, maybe so, or Jim Miller.
Yeah, it's just somebody who is not quite there yet. Well, Stevenson's been there. It's just that Sauropoulos loss definitely put him down a few pegs. But maybe a win against Gomi could, bring him right back up to where he was. We'll see how that plays out. I'm pretty interested to see what the UFC does with Takanori Gomi, because I think that he still has name power, and he's still a, it didn't seem like he was, part of it might have been him fighting Florian, who is, like you said, you know, one of the best 155ers, but it didn't seem like Gomi was game. He didn't, you know, he never really gave up. I mean, by the third round, he, you know, he was probably a little mentally exhausted, and, you know, maybe if that takedown happened in the first round, he would have been able to fight out of it, but, man, after getting jabbed in the face for two rounds like that, I don't blame him for, you know, not necessarily trying his hardest to get out of that, but, you know, we'll, like I said, we'll see what they do with Gomi.
Yeah, what do you, I could see them potentially matching up with somebody like Melvin Gillard, who's coming off two wins that, you know, won't take it to the ground, and isn't, you know, technically as sound as somebody like Florian, where he's going to pick him apart with a jab. I think that would give, I mean, a fight with somebody like Melvin Gillard could end up being cool. Where do you see Kenny Florian from here?
Who wins between BJ Penn and Frankie Edgar?
I agree.
I mean, well, and I guess that could be our next week's show, just going over 112, and, we'll have another show before 112, right?
Yeah, we should. Yeah, so, next Tuesday or Wednesday, somewhere.
But, as far as next week goes, we'll, talk about 112, maybe a little opening day baseball, you know, because we're not entirely MMA, even though that's what, I mean, but this is a good time to get into an MMA if you want to become a fan. There's been a lot of shows recently, and still more to come with 112. But I don't know. We might talk a little baseball. Might talk a little NFL draft. Who knows? We'll see.
closing thoughts. Any fight of the night? Who do you think fight of the night tonight?
I guess fight of the night would probably be the Ross Pearson-Dennis Cyber fight. That was what Fight of the Night was.
The
UFC goes.
No cheating.
But, I cheated after the fact, okay? It's okay if you cheat as long as you do it after the fact.
That's just checking. It's not really cheating.
But, I mean, you know, I haven't watched any of the preliminary card opening fights, except for that the Cal Uno fight they showed while The Undertaker was in the arena.
Or as Mike Goldberg keeps calling him, Carl Uno.
Yeah. Carl One.
What about Knockout of the Night?
Definitely Big Country. I mean, the whole event was, that was more of like a smothering knockout, and you know, the T-Bow knockout just made me sad, so...
Yeah.
Out of the fights I saw, definitely the Big Country fight.
Yeah. And I guess, by default, Kenny Florian gets submission of the night.
Yeah,
I'd
agree.
I think he had the only submission all night, if I'm not mistaken.
Well, the only one we saw, I'm not sure if there was one on the undercard.
I don't think there was on the preliminary card at all. I may be mistaken.
Well, I think that about does it for tonight. Like I said, next week we'll probably run down, we'll definitely run down UFC 112 and maybe come up with another few things to entertain the tens of listeners that we have.
Yep. I guess thank everybody for listening. Give you guys a sign off. I'm Tim.
Casey, tune in next week.
Yep. Internet Top Team.
Bottom one.